For now, we're just going to continue just where we were in these topics. Again, if there's any preference to welcome.
Welcome, Rabbi Reich from Shivat Shalbim. Always a pleasure to see him.
I would say that, you know, it brings great, you know, sense of nostalgia to see you in this room, but you were never in this room, so. But the nostalgia part is true.
For sure.
Okay. So we're going to continue with our little series. As you know, we were discussing the Ramchal and then contrasting it with the Rav's philosophy or a Lithuanian approach, as reflected mostly what we've done in Yishal Macha. I still want to get a chance to do some Nefesh HaChaim before this is all over. So where we're up to at the moment is we've been discussing that the Yishal Macha projects a very ambitious perspective on the question of the physical or material world and its value. Instead of seeing it as a you know, a trap of some sort that needs to be avoided or a test that needs to be overcome, the way the Rav portrays the opportunities of the physical world and projects it as a, you know, larger traditional slash Lithuanian approach is that the opportunities provided by the material world, by Olam Hazeh, really are the foundation for spiritual growth. And while Olam Haba obviously is where one receives a reward, right? Getting to Olam Haba is certainly not the the raison d'etre. It's certainly not the purpose. It's not the final cause. It's just in the category of schar. So basically, this perspective could theoretically have been perceived as one which kind of concedes or dilutes ruchnius, spirituality, and the focus on pure avodas Hashem, because one could have said this is a perspective which, you know, ascribes value to the physical world and the material world and physical pleasure and everything that goes along with it. But what we've tried to explain is that that is certainly not what the Rav is suggesting in Yishal Macha, Chas V'Shalom. If anything, this idea that the physical world is really the focus and the foundation of spiritual growth is a more ambitious, extraordinarily ambitious spiritual agenda. Both of the potential of the physical and material world, the Torah, the Bria of the Ribbono Shel Olam, to be sanctified. That's one aspect of it. And the other, of course, the mechanism or the tool which does that sanctification or which provides a prism and a filter for everything else, and that is the ambitious perspective of the capacity of Halacha and Avodas Hashem to transform Chol and the material into the ideal, optimal basis for Avodas Hashem. So instead of being a compromise and a concession, it's exactly the opposite. This is all about the capacity of Avodas Hashem to be completely transformative. So we tried to document this in the writings of the essay Isha Halacha, where the Rav speaks about even physical phenomena being related to, being integrated into one's life as a function of one's Torah perspective. And then the last thing that we did, and that's what I want to pick up with the next couple of weeks, is to try to show that this isn't just a like a nice philosophy or a theology, but that it has its correlate, it's connected to the way that, to the Derech HaLimud of Brisk itself. In other words, the Rav comes to this from a certain perspective on Halacha, the belief that Halacha has this transformative capacity, right, this ability, right, to refocus our minds and our hearts and to reassess and to refashion, really, the importance of the material world is a function of seeing the world of Torah and the world of Halacha in a certain way. And it's no coincidence, if you ask me, that the Derech of Brisk really is constitutes the theological foundation or underpinnings of this view. Its formalism, its independence, in the sense that it doesn't rely on or doesn't require any kind of rationalization or justification of the halacha, but is all about the inner coherence all of this establishes the transcendence of the halakha, the idea that it's an a priori blueprint of values and of ruchnius itself. This perspective on halakha, and especially halakhic reality that flows from it, is what dictates the transformative capacity that we're talking about as applied to the physical and material world. And again, the fact that the Rav invokes the model or the mashal of theoretical math and theoretical physics, we read some of the passages last time, we read the passages that appear in Ish HaLacha. There are also a passage in Madod Eich Midod and the Hesped for Abelville and in other places highlights this perspective as well. I like to contrast it just to a very famous passage also in a secular source, and that is the introduction, the very beginning of the Common Law by Oliver Wendell Holmes. So he describes what law is from his point of view. And I just thought, in light of the Rav's formulation, one line in particular very much stands out. So he says, the life of the law has not been logic, it's been experience. The felt necessities of time, this is of course talking about secular law, which is what he's dealing with. And the contrast, in my opinion, could not be greater, not only to Torah's view and Halacha's view, but especially the view of the Ish Halacha, the view of Brisk. The felt necessities of the time, the prevalent moral and political theories, intuitions of public policy, avowed or unconscious, even the prejudices which judges share with their fellow men, have had a good deal more to do than the syllogism in determining the rules by which men should be governed. The law embodies the story of a nation's development through many centuries, and this is the key line especially, and it cannot be dealt with as if it contained only the axioms and corollaries of a book of mathematics. In order to know what it is, we must know what it has been and what it tends to become. We must alternatively consult history and existing theories of legislation. But the most difficult labor will be to understand the combination of the two into new products at every stage. The substance of the law at any given time pretty nearly corresponds to, as far as it goes, with what is then understood to be convenient. But its form and machinery and the degree to which it is able to work out desired results depend very much upon its past. So this is a very acceptable statement of secular law, its efficiency, its elasticity, its being a function of, you know, values that are very much contemporary. It works on the system of efficiency, and it's very malleable as a result. And again, it's very far from any kind of abstract a priori system. That's, of course, sharply contrasted with the idea of Bishvil HaTorah Shanikra Reishis Yom HaShishi, you know, Bishvil, you know, the Shishi B'Sivan, you know, the world is created for Matan Torah, the world is created as a vehicle for Torah, Stako Baraiso Bara Alma, you know, the pre-existence of the Torah, the post-existence of the Torah, the idea that, on the contrary, law, of course, I mean, the halacha also relates to the world and is dynamic enough and flexible enough, you know, given both interpretively and the license of Bezdin and Bezdin Hagadol and other licenses to respond to the, you know, to the real situations that we encounter. But fundamentally, the purpose of the law is letzaref. Halacha is letzaref is abrios. It doesn't react to, it doesn't reflect what people are thinking. It's certainly not about efficiency. It's about shaping and inspiring, edifying man, pushing him, propelling him in a certain direction. And the Rav's particular, I say, emphasis is this idea of even the ability to mamash transform material and physical structures, right, to look at the sunset and say, oh, you know, this is the Bein HaShemashos of Yom Kippurim, whose Kedushas Hayom, you know, is different than any other day, and therefore the physical phenomena of that sunset is different as well. And that owes much, I say, to the perspective of Brisk as a formalistic system, as a system which dictates, that's why, and these are the things that we discussed last time, the vocabulary, the emphasis on formulation, the idea of reconstruction, the focus on the Rambam and his classification scheme, the emphasis on Taros and Kodshim in particular as things that have their own inner coherence, and other such things as we discussed, the impact on Umdana, etc. This perspective also highlights a certain solution, or at least an approach, to a problem that is fundamental to Torah, and especially is an issue that is raised whenever some sort of new derech, and especially more independent derech, is introduced in the learning of Torah. And that is a relationship between chidush and mesorah, and especially the idea of yiraso kodemes chachmasa. Because whenever people have focused more on their logic than on simply their mesorah, right, it's always exerted some pressure on this concept of both of mesorah and of yira, which is kodemes. And indeed, we found critiques throughout whenever there's a change in derech halimud, right, you always get a response, number one, that's to be expected. But in some cases, you find a very critical response. When the Baalei Tosis, began their derech, so Chassidei Ashkenaz and others were very critical of what it is that they were doing. Even the Baalei Tosis themselves were self-critical, right? They were aware that things could reduce to, pilpulo shel hevel, or that the previous mesoros could be ignored in some cases, that people who have a certain cleverness or boldness, a greater measure of independence, might be tempted to be self-aggrandizing in terms of turning halacha into a kardom alach borbo. Right, these are all dangers that are spoken of by contemporaries, and you find the parallel when it comes to the introduction of other drachim in Libud in the 16th century, pilpul, and again in the 18th century, and of course, again, brisk itself, the responses of the Ridvaz and Marcheshes and others. The more something seems to be a new innovation, and especially one which relies very much on analysis, right, the potential for abuse is greater. But again, a proper understanding of the system of the Ish Halacha and the Derech of Brisk is really a solution when properly pursued to this problem, because the capacity to transform the material world, right, into a more ambitious agenda of Ruchnius, right, requires that one surrender to the categories and the sensibilities of the system of Halacha. And that's an extraordinary not only concession, but it's an extraordinary sacrifice in a way. One has to, dispense with one's own logic and one's own vision and view of reality and adopt the system of Halakha as his prism. And I would say that when that's done, with understanding, and it's done effectively and it's done sincerely, so Ein Lecha Yiras Shamayim Gedola Mizu, and I think it's a new wrinkle on the idea of Yiraso Kodemes Chachmasa. For somebody to be creative and independent, to contribute to the Mesorah of the Halacha as an insider, which is the only way that it's acceptable, that's what we call evolution rather than revolution, and that's called the Chiddush and continuity rather than something which is antagonistic to Mesorah. For somebody to be able to do that, he has to really surrender to that system, and he has to make himself part of it. And once he does that, that's the Yiraso, which is Kodemes L'Chachmaso. And if you're aware that that is really what you're doing, and if what you're trying to do is reconstruct the thinking of the Tanaim and the Amoraim and the Rambam and the Ravid and the Ksos and the Nesivos, so there's nothing more humbling in a way than that. And if understood, if one is self-conscious what one is doing, then that's a tremendous hedge against the gaiva on the one hand, and again, self-aggrandizement, kardom lach barbo on the other. It doesn't always work that way, because people are people, they have their egos, they're not always self-conscious what they're doing, and so on. But the point is that if you look at the system and the derech, instead of being something which contributes, let's say, to self-aggrandizement, properly understood, it has exactly the opposite effect. Again, it highlights Masorah, the Rav Yisrael always, I've mentioned this many times, two different things, seemingly contradictory to an outsider, and understood to be, you know, self-evident to an insider. And that is, on the one hand, he would extol Rav Chaim's Koach HaChiddush, and his ability to have transformed certain areas of halacha. We spoke last time about shtaros and kashrus and so on. We used to speak about those a lot. And at the same time, the comment that anybody who understands anything about learning understands that there's, if not for the Abai and Rava, there wouldn't be a Rambam and a Ravid, there wouldn't be a Ramban and a Rajba. There wouldn't be Exos and Nesivos, and there wouldn't be a Reb Chaim, meaning that all these are chains in the Masorah, and they follow like a certain pattern. You had a question, Ellie.
I was wondering, Rabbi, how you
first of all, welcome back.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I was wondering, Rabbi, how you insight into Rabbi mentioned earlier about the Rav's, or let's say the idea of Latzarfis and Rios. And
yeah.
It seems like if you read the Rabbi Man, it doesn't seem like he really agrees to such a notion. He seems to say that the halacha is its own axiology, and that, so to speak, the Maisa Mitzvah is where it begins and the Kiyama Mitzvah is where it ends. And it's not that at least just some other greater...
Well, I would say that Litzarif is a brios. I say you're taking a certain position of what you think it means to begin with, and then you're suggesting that there's a discrepancy between that concept and that, the system that the Rav is developing. What I would say is that Litzarif is a brios is really to forge man's personality, the way to it's really to shape him as a religious persona. So it's not for some other purpose. There is no other purpose from the perspective of Isha Halacha. The Bishvila Torah Shenikra Reishis. So Letzarif Esabrios means that the values that you're supposed to be cultivating and defining yourself according to are only accessible to you by Maisa Mitzvos and by Talmud Torah, right? Together with a lot of thought, obviously. And that's Letzarif Esabrios. That shapes who you are. I mean, you're transformed as a person by the principles that you study and that you internalize.
It seems like the Rav is taking a different approach, which is that he's saying that it's not the halacha that serves toward making you a certain person, but that you fulfill the goal of halacha by let's say observing halacha.
Because that transforms
you. The goal, let's say, of the Tzarvus Abrios would be then to activate or to bring to reality more halacha, and therefore halacha is really the goal. It's not, it's a telos of the whole project. It's not necessarily a way, a means towards another end, which is to gain.
I think we're repeating what we said before, but meaning the point isn't to achieve something else. The point is to become an Ish Halacha, right? To be connected to the system in such a way that it becomes second nature, it becomes your instinct. You develop that prism so that automatically you're thinking, acting, and living in a certain kind of way. I mean, that's Letzarif. I mean, literally the words Letzarif is Abrios, means to forge, to forge the man, and to refine him. Refine for what? So in theory, if there's some other ideal, if you were to say, the purpose of the world and the purpose of halacha is a means, and its purpose is, to be a better, humanist. To be a better, some other value, some other extraneous value from the perspective of Torah. And there are people who have. There are people who have interpreted Letzarif as a brios exactly in that way. So then, then Letzarif, then there's a means, there's a mechanism, there's a tool, and there's a result which is separate from it, and this is just a method and a means to another. Just like the Ramchal's view about the world, right? Olam Hazeh, is a certain kind of an experience. It's definitely not the goal at all. It's a it's a method or a tool to achieve something quite different, to get to a completely different place. The chiddush of Ish Halacha is that halacha is the goal, but not just doing it in a mindless way and being a mitzvah. There's value to that too, for sure. But the greater ambition is to be transformed into an Ish Halacha, to imbibe those categories. The idea that this is an a priori blueprint, Istako Baraiso Bara Alma, is that like the most, you know, the greatest attainment that you can have is to be somebody who, you know, who as a person, as a persona, to be a walking Sefer Torah. You know, not just to know what you learn and to do, you know, the mitzvos, but to be somebody who is a living, breathing, you know, an expression of Dvar Hashem and Das Hashem. The idea is that, the again, part of the, you know, unstated assumption is that it's, how can anybody have a relationship with the Rabbono Shalom? He's infinite, we're finite, you know, and never the twain shall really meet. That's the special chesed, that's Bishvila Torah Shenikarashis, that's the Achdus HaMaskil V'HaMuskal, is that the mechanism of Torah and Talmud Torah is to provide a bridge and a connection. And if that's true, so then it isn't a bridge to somewhere or something else, it's Litzarif, literally to refine the person. Not Litzarif to transform him into some other value, but to, so that he can find from within, he can, you know, remove you know, that which is you know, important to shed, and that he can find within himself, you know, the qualities and the values that he was meant to develop in this world. That's what Litzarif means.
Even whatever you're saying about Yerusha Kol Mechafmaso, the fact that you can be mechadish things in Talmud Torah and that's even halacha,
right?
Doesn't that sort of take away from the idea that there's some sort of like set of principles or ideas or sentiments that one should access by the halacha? The fact that you can create within halacha means that there isn't some set laws or set ideas or set feelings that one should have, but rather that it's like malleable.
Well, again, the level of, I wouldn't say it that way. I would say again, there are limits to your chiddush. It's a chiddush. The point I'm trying to make is that it's an insider's chiddush, which means that you're constantly working as someone who is trying to reconstruct Dvar Hashem, and someone who is surrendering to the fundamental process and categories of the halacha. Now, within that, there's a lot of room for understanding things, you know, in a more profound way, creating connections between things, and there can be profound differences. Again, if you study Yevamos or Kiddushin or Psachim, right? You can be, there are always different levels to study it. You can know the halacha, and that's, you know, in itself an incredible accomplishment. And then you can understand how the, you know, what the basic concepts are, and then you can sometimes understand that, you know, the basic concepts aren't isolated and independent, but that they form a system of thought and they work off of each other. I mean, there are different levels. All those are chidushim. Sometimes, you know, an illumination or an insight can be a breakthrough, you know, that explains a connection, you know, between things. We're talking about Kedushas Ishus Shel Yibum as something which is different, a different chalos. That's a very different perspective, you know, than its opposite perspective, which says, which we'll discuss a little bit, which, you know, that one line in the Yerushalmi that says, oh, you know, the real Yotzei Min HaKlal is, you know, Eishes, the Isur of Eishes Ach, you know, La'achar, you know, Misas Ach, when he has children. That's really what's exceptional. Everything else is like, okay, he's dead, so, you know, what should be the problem? They're like, Mikatzeh La'katzeh, different perspectives in Yibum. But in both cases, you have to understand the sources and the interconnection. Now, if you can also show that there's more than one aspect, that there are, you know, it's a little bit complex. It's not only Hutra, there's a Dechuya, and different types of Dechuya. What I'm saying is, we shouldn't underestimate, on the one hand, how these things change and illuminate and how radical sometimes they are in our understanding and how profound an impact that has on our appreciation and our persona as a result. At the same time, this is all within being accepting the system, the methodology of halacha, the details of the Mishnayos, the Gemara, the building blocks, you know, so it's not malleable, you know, infinitely to the point that it's just a bridge to something else. These are all just like we're fine-tuning our appreciation, but sometimes the fine-tuning is a very great significance. Which is why, you know, the other aspect of Yerusha, you know, which is connected to Chachmah, so in this case, I don't know if it's only Kodem, but it's also La'achar, like the Rambam says, you know, when the Rambam says in Uchos Yisori HaTorah about the relationship between Yira and Ava, so he says, in Perek Beis of Yisori HaTorah, So A, he puts them together. I've noted that in the past. Usually he has, you know, one halacha and then the next halacha. Here he has Yira and Ava, and then he explains what is Yira and what is and Ava. Instead of saying, what is Yira? This is what it is. What is the mitzvah of Yira? This is what it is. This is Ava? This is what it is. Anyway, but one of the reasons that he does that, aside from there being two, is because he understands that they're really two sides of the same coin, and that they're interconnected in a certain way. And also on a practical level, but part of that as well, is that the Rambam says that one generates the other, which generates the other, which generates the other, which generates the other. Right? In other words, the Yira adds to the Ava. The Ava, you know, adds more Yira. You know, the Yira adds more Ava. You know, Lu Yitzuyer, we were, I guess, capable of it. So that's a very important, you know, point. And I think that's true in the Yiraso, Kodemus, and Chachmaso. Again, Talmud Torah is both Yira Sashem, and it's also Ava Sashem. That's what the Rambam says in Sefer Mitzvos as well. And this kind of relationship also continues. In other words, on the one hand, Yiraso Kodemus and Chachmaso, and especially with this added wrinkle, the ultimate surrender to the system and you know, at the expense of your own ego, in a way, to begin with, as a prerequisite, is just a powerful thing. Right. Then, you know, you attain a certain stature, and you're an insider, and you have the right to make a contribution. But you also understand things in a different way once you've taken that first step of Yiraso. Right. If you're within the system, and you're Mitzuven, you're a Makabel, not a challenger from the outside, so you can, as an insider, like any insider, right, you just see things differently from the inside. And once that's true, there's a certain greater grandeur, let's say, because now you see connections which you didn't see previously. And that's very inspiring, and that, like, deepens your Yira as well. So it's that same kind of relationship that the Rambam describes in Hilchos Yisod HaTorah. And the fact that both of them, as say, you know, are specifically connected to Talmud Torah is like a very important thing, and that's the what's supposed to be part of the ongoing avoda in Talmud Torah itself. So there's chiddush and there's yira and there's yira and there's chiddush, and it's supposed to be a never-ending kind of process. So when we, for example, we spend so much time sometimes just on like seemingly small things, like you know, you want to understand Abba Shaul, or any topic that we right now we're doing Abba Shaul, right? So you really want to understand it, and you want to understand it, you know, well, you know, and what point did the Chacham disagree with, and what are the implications, and how does this fit in, you know, not just with Yibum and Kiddushas Ishus Shel Yibum, but how does it fit into the bigger picture of Ishus, right? The Gemara Nadarim Daf Chafam at base, or the Rabosa Shel Rashi's, you know, Kiddushay Bia, and so on and so forth. So, you know, once you understand the building blocks, then you can analyze their interrelationship. These are all, I think, very inspiring things that we do it not just because it's intellectually satisfying, although I think it also is very intellectually satisfying, but that's part of the Yira and the greater appreciation. It's all trying to uncover what we, to the best of our ability, you know, Dvar Hashem. And I think you do sort of gain a sense of appreciation, you know, for the profundity and the beauty, you know, and the depth, you know, of what that means. And that is Mitzarif Sabrios, as well as the Maisim, of course, the Lilmod Shalomanas Lasos, you know, is a Hisarin of the Lilmod. The Lasos, on a different level, concretizes, you know, the Lilmod. So it's the involvement in Maisim Mitzvos, and also this, you know, very ambitious, you know, perspective on Talmud Torah, but one which is done as an insider who basically has submitted himself and surrendered himself to the system, is Mitzarif Sabrius. That's the way I understand the Rav's perspective. Anyways, we have to stop in one more minute, but let me just, what I wanted to get to is, I think it's an important perspective, about Yira and Chachma, and I think it is very important. Haskel v'yadoa osi. I always like to quote Rabbeinu Yonah. Rabbeinu Yonah says how, you know, Habu Musunin Badin in Avos, you know, refers to Yedias Hashem. You know, and he specifically says it refers to Choshen Mishpat. Habu Musunin Badin. Haskel v'yadoa osi says is a reference to Choshen Mishpat. That, I think, has some important implications, both for Rabbeinu Yonah Lishitaso and in general, but that's not for now. But what I really want to say is that this perspective on Talmud Torah and Yediyas Hashem, Haskel V'Yadoa Osi, as you know, the Acht, what the Rambam called the Achtus Amaskel V'Amuskel, but in this application of trying to develop a halachic personality, if you will, is a very important part of what learning is. And it's you have to move on, but why understanding well and better, even nuances, is critical for your development and for your yira as well. So this idea of these ideas, rather, I think also explain certain categories in Brisk, in particular, that we're all very familiar with, and we just don't often stop and think about them as much. So I think I mentioned this last time. I didn't get a chance to develop it, and it seems like I'm not going to get it now either. But for example, the idea of chalos, which we talk about, a chalos of something. What is a chalos? And why is it such a dominant, let's say, motif in Brisker thought? So a chalos really is something that is transcendent, and where the formal category, surpasses or outstrips, the components, that created it, or the practical aspect of it. We talk about chalos ishus, but we're talking about something which is more than what you put into it, the maisa that generates it, and also something that transcends, the sum of its parts. An agreement between a husband and a wife, in theory, should never be able to, transcend, a mutual kind of a contract, between them. And that is something which should always be subject to any kind of condition, and which would always kind of be limited by some sort of an efficient consideration. But the idea of chalos ishus is the idea that you can go beyond that, and the halacha demands that you go beyond that. The chiddush of Maimon Har Sinai was that ishus is a halachic category, and that it has kedusha, it's invested with kedusha, and you can't make any kind of condition that you want. There's masno mashakasuv, batoras when it comes to ishus. There's a hagdara, and it's more than you put into it, and it's more than human beings can, contractually create. And that's what it is. It's chalos ishus, and that's why you may need a kiyum. And so on, certain formal requirements that underscore that this is something that transcends or goes beyond. That's a very typical and paradigmatic, like halachic category, which highlights that the halacha, right, isn't just an efficient system, but is an a priori, ideal system, which we try to, as best as possible, live up to and approximate. So last year, for example, or let's give you another example before, since I've ended like 1 minute. So we find even in the halacha itself, where we have, for example, crossovers between one area of halacha and the other. Migu dehave, dofen leinyan sukkah, have a dofen leinyan Shabbos, or things of that sort, migu type issues. And when we think about it, like what that really means, like how does one category, right, impact on another card. Again, there are other ways to explain this, but the point is, it reflects one. The best way to explain it, from my point of view, is it reflects a certain concept or certain idea of halachic reality. Because it's a chalos, let's say, dofen linyan hesukah. Even this is even more fascinating in a way. Even acknowledging that to some extent, right, the role of dofen and sukkah is different than that of mechitza and Shabbos. But if they overlap sufficiently, so the halachic recognition of one, right, can create a certain reality which impacts on the other. It's a very fascinating idea. We have it in a lot of the migos. Last year, we spent some time in, when we were doing second parak of Pesachim, so we spoke about kol marav areach, ein bahem ishum mi'ila, and to what extent yesh or ein bahem mamish. I wanted to suggest then at the time that Shitas HaRambam is that there's a kind of chalos, which dictates, whether or not kol marav areach are really mamish or not. That it isn't just their physical, you know, properties. That some people think kol marav areach, you know, are waves and there's more, you know, chemical or other reality. Or other, some people think that it's, you know, based on impact rather than substance, but rather that the halakha itself, by, you know, giving stature to some of these things, you know, determines. Tried to explain for Shita Sarambam was, for example, that if you hold mitzvos, lihanos nitnu, so the fact that mitzvos are lihanos nitnu create a certain mamashus, right, for kol and shofar, let's say, and reyach, you know, in ketores. Or similarly, in our discussion of Bira Nasha, which is a parallel topic in a way, right, ein begidin beno same tam. So that seems to determine whether the halacha does or doesn't consider, right, a gid to be anything other than, you know, an evan. And yet, you know, analyzing Shita Sarambam, and I don't think it's a coincidence, I think the Rambam is very generally given to this whole perspective, but analyzing Shita Sarambam and the difficulties therein, so we tried to come to the conclusion that the shame Isser of Gid Anasha, where it applies, for example, in a Behema Tahora, right, will be Koveya also. There's a Chalos Gid Anasha Linyan Isser, then there's a Chalos Gid Anasha, you know, to be considered part of Chelev with respect to the problem of Chizkiah and Ravavo, you know, whether it's Asur B'Hanon. I'm just giving, again, those who weren't here last year, which is definitely some of the crowd, I apologize for the example. Could have picked others, but the point is, these are examples of chalos. Now, Achronim before Reb Chaim, you know, may have struggled to say some of these things and didn't say them fully. Again, last year we talked about the Kapos Tamarim, the Avnei Miluim, who the Meiri, who I think is indicating this, but so they say it in other ways, or they'll use an expression or a category like Achshavei to express this. Achshavei comes close to it. But Achshavei isn't quite of, it doesn't have as wide a scope, let's say, as this idea. Both certainly not in terms of applying it. Also, ideationally, it's a little bit different. But it's again, this crossover idea is a reflection that, you know, these things exist. It's not just we're obligated to eat or not to eat, to smell or not to smell, to blow or create a sound or not. Meaning the sound, you know, takes on stature, and sometimes that has cross halachic, you know, significance, you know, by virtue of that. That's halachic reality. That's the idea that, you know, a physical object, right, becomes more concrete, legally more concrete, by virtue of, you know, what the system assigns to it. So the whole idea of chalos, as we find it, is really a very paradigmatic, like Brisker type category, and one which I think is very consistent with the idea that one can really transform, you know, physical actions or processes or the physical material world in a very dramatic spiritual way. So I think especially that was, you know, very much, I think there are echoes of this obviously earlier. If we believe that it's true, it's because we believe that these explanations are sustained by the evidence, namely by the psukim, by the doraisas, by the gemaras, etc. But I think, you know, Reb Chaim was very instrumental in bringing especially these formalistic aspects. And it's very fascinating. Maybe I'll just give one or two examples, and we'll try to conclude this next week. But, you know, pre-Reb Chaim, I think, are two ways to measure Reb Chaim's impact, and especially in this particular area. One is to take the things that are most different, his solutions to certain problems that are most mechudash, and the other way is to take the ones that are most approximate of previous solutions, and yet you see just the way that it's applied. The nuances are ones which highlight, you know, this perspective and what is unique about it. So, for example, we talked a little bit about Kinyu Stira, right, this year, just to maybe use some examples that we're already familiar with. The Beis Halevi's Kinyu Yestira and Reb Chaim's Kinyu Yestira, which overlap, you know, 80-90%, but I think also typify, you know, where you see the change. And the change is important internally in terms of the, you know, the development of Lamdas, but also I think highlights this idea of halachic reality in a way that is important for the larger philosophical and theological picture as well. Did you want to ask something? No. Okay, we'll stop here. I'm sorry we're a little later than usual. And to be continued.